Hello everyone, my name is Shailesh Singh and today we'll be discussing about instant restenosis. So how do you define instant restenosis? There have been various definitions which have been proposed. Angiographic instant restenosis is defined as luminal narrowing with more than 50% diameter stenosis of a stented coronary segment or in the adjacent native vessel within the 5 millimeters of the stent. Clinical instant restenosis has been defined as angiographic appearance of instant restenosis plus any one of the following, that is symptoms suggestive of coronary artery disease, ECG suggestive of underlying coronary ischemia, positive hemodynamic tests such as positive FFR or IFR, intravascular ultrasound suggestive of cross-sectional area less than 4 millimeter square for most of the vessels except for left main. For left main the cutoff is 6 millimeter square, or a reduction of more than 70% in luminal area even in the absence of symptoms. What is recurrent instant restenosis? Recurrent instant restenosis has been defined as restenosis occurring after implantation of more than equal to 2 stents. Now we'll talk about the incidence of ISR. Incidence of ISR is very high in patients with bare metal stents. It is close to 30%, whereas in patients who are given DES, approximately 5 to 10% and some authors say 5 to 18% patients develop instant restenosis. Then the ISR rates with second generation DES is similar to the risks with first generation stents. Now about the onset of ISR. After POBA, ISR develops usually within the first 6 months. ISR develops after an average time of 5.5 months in patients who are given stents. BMS ISR usually presents early, that is typically within 6 to 8 months, whereas DES ISR usually presents late, that is usually 2 years after the stent implantation. This time is less if the initial presentation of ISR is myocardial infarction. Now we'll talk about late lumen loss. So average late lumen loss is approximately 0.8 to 1 millimeter after bare metal stenting. That is when a 4 millimeter vessel is stented with a bare metal stent, approximately 44% of the area is lost. When a 2 millimeter vessel is stented with a bare metal stent, approximately 75% of the lumen area is lost. What we understand from this is, if stents are placed in thinner vessels, there is high likelihood of landing up with instant restenosis. How does the instant restenosis present? It is most of the time asymptomatic, that is in approximately 50% of the patients. Even when the silent ischemia is demonstrable, there are no symptoms. When the symptoms are present, stable angina is the most common manifestation. Acute coronary syndrome occurs in approximately 20 to 25% patients. Some studies have found that in patients with bare metal stents, unstable angina may be present in 26 to 53% patients, that is approximately 1/4 to half of the patients. And in 18% of patients with drug-eluting stents presenting with ISR, the presentation may be unstable angina. Myocardial infarction may be present in 3.5 to 20% of patients with bare metal stent instant restenosis, whereas it may be present in 2% patients in patients with drug-eluting stents with instant restenosis. Severe adverse consequences are seen if there is a stenosis of left main coronary artery. So what are the risk factors for instant restenosis? The risk factors may be related to the patients, risk factors may be related to the drugs, there may be mechanical risk factors, there may be lesion related risk factors, and there may be biological factors. First, we'll talk about the patient related risk factors. The patient related risk factors include old age, diabetes, female gender, there may be genetic association, and there may be restenotic lesions may be seen after brachytherapy or drug eluting stents. What are the pharmacological factors? There can be drug resistance to dual antiplatelet therapy. There can be hypersensitivity to the polymer or there can be hypersensitivity to the drug which is used in drug-eluting stent. What are the mechanical factors which are responsible for in-stent restenosis? They include stent under expansion, stent malposition, stent fracture, geographical miss, or edge trauma. What are the lesion-related risk factors which are associated with in-stent restenosis? They include type B or type C lesions, ostial lesions, bifurcation lesions, CTOs, lesions more than 20 millimeters, vessels smaller than 3 millimeters, calcified lesions. These lesions are more likely to present with in-stent restenosis. What are the biological factors which are associated with in-stent restenosis? They include matrix metalloprotein and plasma proteolytic enzymes. So there are three most important risk factors for in-stent restenosis, and these include diabetes mellitus, increased length of stent, and small minimum luminal diameter of the vessels. These are the three most important factors which are associated with in-stent restenosis. So a word or two about few important terms mentioned in the mechanical causes of in-stent restenosis. What is geographical miss? Geographical miss is a term which is used in context of drug-eluting stent. That this is an area of treated segment which was exposed to balloon injury, but it was not covered with stent struts, and thus it did not receive the adequate suppressive therapy. What is a stent fracture? Stent fracture is complete or partial separation of stent at follow-up that was contiguous after the original stent plantation. It is present in approximately 1 to 8% of patients who receive a DES. What happens with stent fracture is the scaffolding is impaired, which impacts the subsequent drug delivery. This in-stent restenosis has been classified, and the most classic classification has been given by Mehran et al. And it was published in the 90s. They have divided the types of in-stent restenosis into four types: type class 1, class 2, class 3, and class 4. Class 1 is a focal ISR, focal in-stent restenosis. These are the lesions less than 10 millimeters. And class 2 lesion is diffuse intrastent in-stent restenosis. These are the lesions which are more than 10 millimeters in length and are confined to the stent, and they do not extend outside the margins of the stent. Class 3 is diffuse proliferative in-stent restenosis. These lesions are more than 10 millimeters and they extend beyond the margins of the stent. Class 4 is in-stent restenosis with total occlusion. These stents have TIMI flow of 0. Another classification which is now being talked about is Bachman classification, and it has been given for drug-eluting stent in-stent restenosis. So this has classified the drug-eluting stent associated in-stent restenosis into five types. Type 1 is classified as mechanical. Type 1A and type 1B are the two subtypes. Type 1 is stent under expansion, and type 1B is a stent fracture. Type 2B is biological ISR, and this is further subclassified into type 2A, type 2B, and type 2C. Type 2A is ISR due to intimal hyperplasia. Type 2B is ISR due to neoatherosclerosis, which is non-calcified. Type 2C is ISR due to neoatherosclerosis, which is calcified. Type C is mixed, that is a combination of mechanical and biological factors. Type 4 is chronic total occlusion. Type 5 is DES ISR or drug-eluting stent in-stent restenosis previously treated with more than equal to two stents. So why this classification is useful? Because it helps us in deciding treatment for in-stent restenosis. How is the in-stent restenosis different between the bare metal stents and drug-eluting stents? In the bare metal stent in-stent restenosis, the pattern is usually focal, whereas in patients with DES ISR, the pattern is usually proliferative. The BMS ISR is usually because of neo-intimal hyperplasia, whereas the DES ISR is usually due to neoatherosclerosis. The DES ISR is more difficult to treat as compared to BMS ISR and has outcomes which are poorer than BMS ISR. BMS ISR or bare metal stent in-stent restenosis, it presents early. That is, it usually presents within first 6 to 8 months, whereas drug-eluting stent in-stent restenosis typically presents after 2 years. It has delayed presentation. So what are the mechanisms of restenosis? These include negative vessel remodeling and elastic recoil, neo-intimal hyperplasia, and neoatherosclerosis. Of these, negative vessel remodeling and elastic recoil are responsible for restenosis after POBA or plain bold balloon angioplasty. Neo-intimal hyperplasia and neoatherosclerosis are responsible for in-stent restenosis after stenting. So what is negative remodeling? To understand this, we should know what is remodeling. Remodeling is the change in arterial size after vascular injury. Negative remodeling is decrease in the arterial size after vascular injury. Negative remodeling is mainly responsible for luminal loss after angioplasty and atherectomy. It is usually seen 1 to 6 months after balloon angioplasty, and it accounts for 60% of luminal loss. It is mainly because of tunica adventitia. What happens is there is proliferation and concentric compression of external elastic lamina. Why this happens is because of the vessel injury, there are adventitial fibroblasts, they convert into myofibroblasts, and this causes concentric compression of external elastic lamina. What is neo-intimal hyperplasia? Neo-intimal hyperplasia is responsible for in-stent restenosis in bare metal stents. What happens in neo-intimal hyperplasia is, neo-intimal hyperplasia is an exaggerated inflammatory response at the site of balloon injury. There is some smooth muscle proliferation and migration, and there is excessive extracellular matrix production. All this results in neo-intimal hyperplasia. The neo-intima is primarily made up of this extracellular matrix and smooth muscle cells. The amount of neo-intimal hyperplasia is determined by the degree of inflammation which is produced by the vascular injury. There are three factors at play behind neo-intimal hyperplasia. These are vessel injury, excessive extracellular matrix production, and vascular smooth muscle cell proliferation and migration into tunica media. The vessel injury is caused by increased pressure which is required to place the stent and the allergy to nickel and molybdenum. The vessel injury causes dysfunction of the endothelium, and this causes decreased nitric oxide production. The vessel injury causes the endothelium to come in contact with the platelets, leading to the formation of platelet-rich thrombus. This thrombus is subsequently degraded by myofibroblasts, and it is replaced by the extracellular matrix. Also, the vessel wall destruction, injury to the vascular smooth muscles, and de-endothelization leads to WBC infiltration, increased inflammation, increased expression of adhesion molecules, increased production of matrix metalloprotease, which leads to breakdown of collagen and elastin, which in turn leads to increased migration of smooth muscle cells into tunica media. What is neoatherosclerosis? Neoatherosclerosis is said to be present when a lesion within the stented segment resembles a native atherosclerotic plaque. It is different from native vessel atherosclerosis. Neoatherosclerosis is rapidly progressive. That is, it progresses over months to years versus decades required for progression of native vessel atherosclerosis. It is more commonly seen with drug-eluting stents as compared to bare metal stents. The incidence of neoatherosclerosis is the same whether the stent is everolimus-eluting stent or sarolimus-eluting stent or paclitaxel-eluting stent. Histologically, it is characterized by the presence of lipid-laden foamy macrophages which progress to form typical fibroatheroma. Also, necrotic core may be present and calcification may be present. The exact mechanism of neoatherosclerosis is not known. However, certain mechanisms are possible. These include the stent placement causes disturbance in the local blood flow, leading to activation of regenerating endothelial cells, which in turn leads to increased expression of adhesion molecules, as a result of which there is infiltration of monocytic cells in the subendothelial space, which later on turn into foam cells. The polymer coating of these stents can cause chronic inflammation. This chronic inflammation results in infiltration of macrophages, giant cells, and lymphocytes. This can lead to atherosclerosis. There can be endothelial dysfunction behind neoatherosclerosis. This endothelial dysfunction causes decreased production of antithrombotics and decreased production of nitric oxide, which in turn can lead to neoatherosclerosis. This endothelial dysfunction can be because of the drug which is present in these stents, or it can be because of the vessel injury which is caused by these stents. So, what is the medical management of in-stent restenosis? There are some studies which support the use of long-term dual antiplatelet therapy in patients who have had an episode of in-stent restenosis. An example of such study was Prodigy trial. In a subset of Prodigy trial, it was found that long-term dual antiplatelet therapy was beneficial in the patients who had in-stent restenosis. There had been some evidence of benefit with cilastazole. It was the CREST trial, which was published in Circulation in 2005, and it had found benefits of cilastazole in patients with in-stent restenosis. However, the data is not very strong and it is not routinely used in the management of in-stent restenosis. In the patients who present to us with acute coronary syndrome, the dual antiplatelet therapy consisting of aspirin plus prasugrel or ticagrelor is advised. In patients who receive brachytherapy, lifelong dual antiplatelet therapy may be required. What is the role of intracoronary imaging in management of in-stent restenosis? So this is a very useful modality. It helps us to understand the mechanism of stent failure. Stent underexpansion may be present or malapposition may be present, which can be identified by the use of intracoronary imaging. Also, these imaging modalities help in guiding the intervention, such as the IVUS guided intervention helps in generation of larger luminal diameter of the vessels. So what modalities should we use? Both IVUS and OCT can be used, and OCT can provide superior image quality for evaluation of in-stent restenosis. Also, OCT is useful in detecting thin neoentema in the follow-up imaging after desimplantation. Both the imaging modalities have their advantages and limitations, such as IVUS is a suitable choice for patients with severely compromised kidney function test, whereas the OCT has the advantage of higher resolution. It gives more information because of its high resolution. It is superior to IVUS in identifying uncovered stent struts. It is better for detection of neoentemal hyperplasia. However, the limitations of OCT include the use of additional contrast, and this makes it not a very good investigation for patients who have severely compromised kidney function test. On the other hand, the limitations of IVUS include limited resolution. Because of its limited resolution, the IVUS cannot reliably identify the separation between intima and media and the relationship between the adventitia and periadventitial structures. How do we manage our in-stent restenosis? So the Wachmann classification, which I discussed previously, is useful in deciding the management of in-stent restenosis. Firstly, if the underlying cause of in-stent restenosis is mechanical, then what do? We see that if there is stent underexpansion, we go for high pressure balloon inflation. If there is underlying stent fracture, what do? We put in a drug-eluting stent. The biologic cause may include neoentemal hyperplasia, which can be managed by either POBA or drug-eluting stent or drug-coated balloon or brachytherapy. Or The biologic cause of instant restenosis may be non-calcified neoatherosclerosis. What we do for this is drug-coated balloon or drug-eluting stents can be used. Alternatively, in patients with neoatherosclerosis, which is calcified type 2C, we can go for scoring balloon, laser atherectomy, and rotational atherectomy. In patients who have got mixed biologic as well as mechanical lesion, the treatment of the lesion has to be individualized. In the patients who have a CTO in ISR, either of DEB, that is drug-coated drug-eluting balloon, or drug-eluting stent, or brachytherapy can be used. In patients who have more than 2 layers of DES implanted, either PCI or CABG can be considered. When we are doing PCI, we have to use high-pressure balloons or brachytherapy or DEB. PCI for instant restenosis should be considered with drug-coated balloon in patients who either get first ISR or they have focal ISR or they have bare metal stent ISR or they have multiple stent layers. PCI with DES for management of ISR should be preferred in patients who have suboptimal predilatation or who have diffuse instant restenosis or who have loss of mechanical integrity of stents or who have failure of treatment with drug-eluting balloons. Other treatment modalities which can be used or have been used in patients with ISR include balloon angioplasty. This was one of the earliest treatment which was used in patients with instant restenosis. So there was some benefit which was seen in patients who had focal ISR, especially in patients with stent and native artery size mismatch. High pressure balloon dilatation and use of non-compliant balloon was found to be beneficial in these patients. Cutting and scoring balloons, these have also been used for management of patients with ISR. They are attractive and simple techniques for management of instant restenosis. The cutting balloon deeply incises the new intimal tissue and that is why it is beneficial. The RESCUT trial compared the cutting balloon angioplasty with plain old balloon angioplasty for treatment of instant restenosis and it was found that cutting balloon was not superior to POBA. It did not decrease MACE and it did not decrease recurrent ISR. The advantages cutting balloon gave over POBA was use of fewer balloons, less requirement of additional stenting and lower incidence of balloon slippage. The scoring balloons work on the same principle as cutting balloons and have got superior flexibility and deliverability. The debulking procedures like rotational atherectomy and laser atherectomy have also been used for management of instant restenosis. Rotational atherectomy and laser atherectomy both involve the removal of neointimal tissue or neoatherosclerotic plaque. Rotablation has been compared with plain old balloon angioplasty for management of instant restenosis in two trials. One was the ROSTER trial and the other was the ARTIST trial. Both of these trials found the benefits of rotational atherectomy in management of instant restenosis. The rotational atherectomy decreased the amount of residual tissue within the stent. Also, it decreased the rate of target lesion revascularization at follow-up. It had lower restenosis rate and it had superior clinical outcomes. Laser atherectomy is another modality which has been used for management of neoatherosclerosis. Laser atherectomy also involves the physical removal of neointimal tissue or neoatherosclerotic plaque. And it has been used for the management of DES instant restenosis in presence of complex lesions. Although the debulking techniques are not routinely used in management of ISR, they can be considered as a pre-treatment option for undilatable ISR lesions, especially those where there are severely underspanned stents or calcified intrastent neoatherosclerosis. So now we come to drug-coated balloons. Drug coated balloons are basically semi compliant balloons coated with the cytotoxic drugs. The advantages that drug coated balloons offer over DES in management of instant restenosis is that it avoids metal layers and it allows the blood vessel to retain its vasomotor functions as compared to DES PCI. Because it leaves no polymer, no metal behind, the issues of malposition, under expansion, chronic inflammation are not there. So there are lesser chances of restenosis. As there is no polymer, there is no chronic inflammation. There is homogeneous drug absorption in the vessel wall, and the highest concentration of the drug is achieved at the time of balloon inflammation. Additional advantage that drug-coated balloons offer is shorter DAPT. If we compare the treatment of bare metal ISR to treatment of drug-eluting stent ISR, in patients with BMS ISR, drug-coated balloons have been found to be superior to plain old balloon angioplasty. Drug-coated balloons are found to be as good as first-generation DES. In patients with DES ISR, DES or drug-eluting stent has been found to be superior to POVA. Drug-coated balloon or DEB is non-inferior to new-generation DES in the management of DES ISR. Also, the drug-coated balloons have been found to be as good as newer generation DES in management of DES ISR. If we talk about DEB versus DES in management of ISR, most of the authors say that drug-eluting stent is the highest efficacy treatment for instant restenosis, whereas DEB or drug-coated balloon is second highest efficacy treatment for instant restenosis. Repeat drug-eluting stent implantation is the highest efficacy treatment for patients with DES ISR and BMS ISR. Ideally, DES with very thin struts are used for management of patients with ISR. DES ISR secondary to stent undersizing, edge dissection or stent fracture. These are best managed with implantation of another drug-eluting stents. So which stent to choose? The same DES? Or should we use a different DES? Some authors have postulated the use of a different anti-proliferative drug may offer additional advantages. This homo DES versus hetero DES has been tested in three trials, and these include ISR Desire 2, Restent ISR, and RIPS 3 trial. The ISR Desire 2 and Restent ISR trials found no significant difference between the use of homostent or heterostent. On the other hand, the RIPS 3 trial found significantly better clinical and angiographic outcomes in patients in whom heterodes was used. Now, a few words about the evidence that we have in favor of the treatment modalities that we use in management of DES ISR. For the management of DES ISR, paclitaxel eluting balloon have been found to be better than POBA in PEPCAD DES trial. PEPCAD China ISR and PEPCAD ISR 2 trials have found that paclitaxel eluting balloon and paclitaxel eluting stent both are good for management of DES ISR. The ISR Desire 3 trial found that paclitaxel eluting balloon is as good as paclitaxel eluting stent, and both are better than POBA for management of DES ISR. The DARE trial found that everolimus eluting stent was as good as paclitaxel eluting balloon for management of DES ISR. The RIPS 4 trial found that everolimus eluting stent was better than paclitaxel eluting stent for the management of DES ISR. The trial found that there was lower need for repeat revascularization with everolimus eluting stent. This was a landmark trial. It was a practice-changing trial, and it made the drug-eluting stents as the first preferred treatment option for management of DES ISR. The RIPS 5 trial found that everolimus eluting stent were better than paclitaxel eluting balloon for the management of BMS ISR. The RIPS 4 trial has shown that drug-eluting stents are better than drug-eluting balloon for the management of DES ISR, and with the introduction of DES with very thin struts, the concern for additional metal layer is now very low. Intracoronary brachytherapy has also been used for management of refractory ISR. Basis behind this is that it is believed that brachytherapy causes reduction in vascular smooth muscle proliferation, thereby decreasing neoendymal hyperplasia. The use of brachytherapy declined with increase in use of DES. It has now been found that ICBT or intracoronary brachytherapy can be used for management of recurrent DES restenosis also, BRS or bioreabsorbable scaffolds. So an alternative to the repeated use of DES is the use of bioreabsorbable scaffolds. This is especially useful when DEB is supposed to be inadequate. The advantages that bioreabsorbable scaffold offers is that it eventually disappears and this avoids multiple layer of the stents and prevents luminal loss and prevents loss of vasomotor function of endothelium. CABG can also be done for management of ISR. What are the patients in which CABG is an ideal choice? These include recurrent episodes of diffuse ISR in large vessels and associated multivessel disease in presence of other complex lesions such as CTOs. Thank you. That was the presentation, guys.